Let us begin with a word of prayer. Heavenly Father, we thank you for this day in which thou permits us again to see ourselves in moving in thy grace and in thy promises. So we look forward this morning, O God, to have you reveal to us again what it means to be a person, what it means to be a sexual being. Forgive us, O God, for the times we have not been willing to review this in the light of thy love to us. And free us, O God, from some of the isolation that often causes us not to look at ourselves as thou hast created us, and help us to be honest. Amen. I would like to say to begin with that what I have to mention this morning is not on behalf of a youth department of the American Lutheran Church. It's not by any wildest stretch of the imagination any expert who is speaking to you at all. But I would like to speak to you as a Christian parent, amateur as that might be sometimes, a person who still can remember his teenage days, who now has a couple of teenagers. We'll have a third one in a couple of months, who I think is struggling as much as anybody to find some meaning in this whole business of sex in the Christian life. And when I say this, I don't think the youth this morning, you've got to get it clear. We're not speaking about you. We're speaking about ourselves, for what many of these things that we're going to talk about has deep implications for the wife and the husband relationship, as well as a love affair that you might be having while you're in high school. They aren't that far removed, so that I hope when we are talking about some things that you will see that it's not about you, but about us. So this is the stance from which I move. I was in my office about a year ago, and in the office we're always concerned with ways that we can actually communicate to people on paper. It's always a problem. And stewardship was having a real problem in trying to have people read their materials. And I was on my involved in something on my desk, and a man came up from the stewardship office, and he threw a piece of new format for some stewardship material. And what it was a flaming red background with large letters on it, and said sex. And so I looked at it and I opened it up. Inside it says, "Now that I have your attention, we will talk about stewardship." You know. Sometimes we don't want to admit that we are vitally interested in this, but we use subtle ways to kind of make our ways known. I put on the board some things which I don't know if you can read. It's too small, perhaps. But I think the haunting question I have, really, when I talk with my own children, when I am involved with youth groups, are we attempting in this whole area of sex to answer some questions that you aren't asking, really? And I think often we have been guilty of running by the same things. And you've been very patient, really have. You sat there and you've nodded, "That's right, Dad," or "That's right, sir," you know. And really, these aren't the questions you're asking, but we think we have the answers and we know what your questions are. And this morning I'm in the same boat. I really am. But I come to one conclusion, and that is that I don't think the mission of Christian parents, the church, or Christian couples is basically any more sex education as we understand it. I don't think that's the real question. I think the real question is, how in the world can I get meaning out of sex in my Christian experience? How does my faith jibe, or how can I find it active and revealing in the meaning of sex? Now, that one is tougher, and that one doesn't only apply to you youth. That applies to us who are married couples, that we can in some way make this so far removed from an experience of faith, yet we talk and we give lip service to it. You know, we say it's sacred, it's holy, all this. And really, if we're honest, we have a difficult time seeing the free news of the gospel revealed in this relationship. So this morning, I could hope we might try it from that point of view. We're not going to talk about the biological functions. Man, you know more than maybe I do about this. I saw a cartoon once where the father took he's going to take his boy and he's going to talk to him about the birds and the bees, you know? And he set him down on the sofa, and he sat over in a big chair, and he started to talk to him. And the next cartoon shows the father in the big chair, I mean the son in the big chair and the father in the sofa, and he was talking to the father. I think this often happens. We think that you are really having much knowledge, and you do. But in this dilemma, and I think this is where we are, in the dilemma of trying to find meaning for sex, we still live in this world which have some real forces at work that tend to pull us in one side or the other. And I think we know that in our society there are forces that we feel, maybe we haven't got a chance to articulate it, but they're there. One side which I think says that is concern for society, that there is in this meaning of sexual codes imposed on society, they are concerned that the group itself, the community, the larger scope, remain in order. And therefore they scream real loud, there must be rules governing behavior patterns in sex. And we know what some of these are, but I must, before I mention these, I think at the same time, this cry for rules which protect for the sake of the group, the society, the other people, there is the modern day rebel who is becoming more and more apparent, you know, at this point, who hollers and screams and say, now look, we also have to protect that which has to say on behalf of the individual, that we mustn't lose the person in this side for the sake of the group and the rules over here established. And he cries real loud over here, and he's becoming very more descriptive, I think, in these last 15 years, we'll say. Not that there never was this, good land, yes, but it's been all more, but more subtle on this side. And therefore, the tension as you walk in trying to find meaning, you've made pulled in forces on both sides, saying, which side should I move at this point? I am an individual. God has given me some very deep and personal meanings that I must express myself. Now, am I going to just junk that for the sake of living up to the rules on this side? See, this is the tension, right, that we're in. And I think we should look at a few of them just for a little while to say that maybe they do make sense, and sad to say, maybe on both sides. That the society which has responsibility for maintaining order and the like, I think we can't deny saying that it has some good reasons why it must have rules. For it knows that, at least in Western culture, I think, that it's the problem of finding that human beings, you know, are the only animal who arrive at sexual maturity before they arrive at social maturity. There's a wide gap. At the point when a boy or girl is capable of reproducing himself, is much younger in the time when he can take full responsibilities in a society. There's a wide gap in here. And society says we better put some rules here, or we're going to have some real chaos, because I'm not yet able to take my place in society to fulfill the responsibilities I have as a parent, as my other relationship in community, then there's problems. So he puts some rules to ensure this. And I think the one big rule that we know about is that he says, in a sense, the admission ticket, you know, for sexual relations, sexual intercourse, is the marriage license. We see this. This is what it says. So we learn to say that when a person has a marriage license, he is free to participate in sexual intercourse. Legal. This is what the state says, really. And if you want to stamp your ticket twice, you can go and have a church wedding, and there again, you get another stamp which says, this is in order, this is proper. That's the rule. We know about it. And against it, it protects, from what they say, chaos. Now, there are methods of enforcement, I think, on this one. How do they go ahead? Because they know this is a powerful kind of vehicle they're working with. How do they go ahead and try to enforce these rules? And it's interesting to see that many times it's negative, too often negative. I think they've tried to display sex as being dirty. And you might not see it written in a blackboard, but just catch sometimes the things that are said about a sex as being dirty. Even in the church, you know, we've fallen on this side. I remember a couple of years ago, we have a little short story called When is a Wedding? And in my particular congregation, it was used with the youth group. I wasn't around. I was in Texas at the time, and I came back, and my wife was very disturbed because she had been to Ladies' Aid one night. And one of the ladies, one of the staunch, real fine people in our congregation, not knowing what the origin of this piece of material was, she had talked to my wife and said, you know, my boy is in Luther League, and they're reading some filthy stuff in Luther League. And if they don't cut it out, I'm going to take my boy out of Luther League. Now, this was a very beautiful kind of description of what really is a wedding all about. Someone, you see, could not make the transfer to see that when we can talk about the bedroom scene, that it is wonderful, it's holy, it's beautiful. And yet she, who had a most pious look on all of the things, this thing she could not equate. And therefore, she had to call it dirty. Now, think about that boy and how he's going to match this in terms of his own life. Horror movies. You who were in the service recall with me how they really used to get at us about keeping ourselves in line. Oh, they were horrible, showing us some of the venereal disease effects, gonorrhea, syphilis, in some of the most extreme cases. Subtle, maybe, but I didn't think it was too subtle to say. Now, nothing about the person and the relationship, nothing at all here, but boy, watch what can happen, you know. It's just a way of trying to control society in terms of the army. And it says we must have the laws, they're even there. Parts of the body must be covered, it says, or we find ourselves in trouble again, which is a control, because it has some reason behind it, to be sure. But these are the kinds of things that control us to see that we don't get out of line, and the whole blinking thing becomes chaos. There are obvious and subtle kinds of stigmas that are associated with unwed mothers. You know the name they call for illegitimate people, children. This is society. It's saying something about a negative way of enforcing you better stay in line or else you will be called. Thank God for institutions and departments, and I say such as Pastor Bo is heading, who is trying to redeem and trying to live out what the business of forgiveness is all about in restoring these people. Now, the pressures, why do you catch these pressures? They are rules of galore that try to keep you in line because we are part of a community, whether it's small or the larger ring, and it's there. But all of this, you see, can tend to say nothing about you or us walking in this relationship. It has to do with rules. Now, the other extreme, we haven't got time to get into a lot of this, but on the other side of the force, this rebel saying, look, I am a person. I have some desires. And he will use scripture glory, you know. Don't think that they don't. And he has some points. Don't let's say this side here, you see, is the Christian side, and that's the devil. By no means. But they have some points to be made. That in this relationship between a couple, married or not married, there are some very sensitive kinds of looks in terms of what's happening in this meaning of sex. Now, are we going to disregard them and nuts to how you feel just so you adhere to the rules, you see? He cries in rebellion, and he wants a free society. And when taking these things, I think, in extreme, then we see exactly the one is trying to make his point known, so it becomes all the more extreme on either side. And then here's where we see the real demonic in it all. Instead of saying, I don't need an admission ticket, I don't. I have my own pass. For I think it's a, what is it, Freud, who has a pleasure principle, I want what I want when I want it. That's really what he adheres to. And as a result, he feels then he is free to react and to place upon him, on the other, that which he desires at any time, with no questions asked and no regard to the social consequence or the social responsibility that he has over here. Oh, they have methods of enforcement. They sure do. And I think that we better not be so naive, people, especially parents at this point, that we better not become acquainted with some of these tools that attempt to stimulate and to make things, you see, the freedom of the individual. We better be quite acquainted with them. I don't think that we better not. Sex is fun. There is truth in that. And I want to ask anyone here who said there isn't. It is. But my goodness, it isn't the whole picture, you see. And this is what we see, the distorted look, you see, and we'll say in some of the movies that really create the pleasure, you know, the real image is the pleasure. There's nothing that surrounds it in terms of really what is happening to people because of this. No, it's just that, you see, a body becomes kind of a vehicle for transcendent pleasure, we'll say. This is the kind of image it has. I think of the book Carpetbaggers, and if you've read it, or the movie you might have seen, I think it gives a kind of an image of this guy who really had the money, and he could buy everything. He could buy planes, entertainment, he could also buy playthings, and those playthings were women. And I think the magazine Playboy is a real descriptive, very honest description of really this kind of philosophy. It's a playboy wanting to play with things, not people, but things. This is what he's after. And as a result, he says, I am free, because these are the impulses that I have. The body then for him becomes, I think, more important by far than the person. And let's not say that part of that isn't truth, because the body is important. And who's here to say that it isn't, you see? But we have a peculiar edge now, the person, and we can get very spiritual about this, and then want to evade the importance of the integral part of the body. He has taken it to the other extreme and has minimized what maybe we have done the other way, has minimized, just about excluded, the person. I think of, if you remember, anybody know Norma Jean Baker? Maybe a few of you do. But most of us know Marilyn Monroe, you see. Same person. And I saw the description of this one article of a man who said that Norma Jean Baker was murdered by Marilyn Monroe. Now, who made that image of Marilyn Monroe? It was, he claims, not Norma Jean Baker, but we, who made her a sex goddess, and as a result, we didn't see Norma Jean Baker. Now, here's this person who attempts to build up this kind of image, the sex kitten, you know, all this images that says that the body is what counts. The physical kinds of interplay here is the only thing that's important, and he wants to protect that right as an individual to pursue in this measure. We could go on and on, but we must admit that both forces are at work, trying to at least overcome the other. This we know won't happen, but in the midst of it, we are hung, aren't we, as saying that they do give a chance for us to see attention either way. And the reason here, as we know, is that on this side, I think, The external results is what counts. This is what they're worrying about, that we can look at society, it's still in hand, it hasn't gotten out of control, and if we need more rules, we'll put them in. Or if it's moving quite beautifully, we will kind of maybe cut off a few of them. The external look is what counts. On this side, I think it's always the protection and the freedom of the individual. This is the hue and cry at this point, and part of it's right. Now I want to move on. If we're in the business, then in the dilemma of what we find ourselves walking, realizing that which code can a Christian accept? And as we go down, and I haven't had a chance to list them all, but if we were to list them all on both sides, an honest Christian could say he couldn't buy either one. For here we see all the images of the law, don't we? All of them are there. Rules that have good reason for them. There is no doubt about there. Good reasons. But it has to do with the sake of the group, and the individual is destroyed, in a sense, on this side. On this side, we see the whole business of being free, but it is not the kind of the freedom we're kind of going to live with as a person who is free in Christ, for instance. It's a kind of a distorted look. But some of the elements on that side we want to protect, because Christ called me, and he works with me as an individual. For that reason, then, I suppose a Christian couldn't accept or buy either side of that particular force or a code that is there. Now, what is lacking in both sides of that of those callings? And here's where I think we must spend our time today, is not so much as what to describe all this on both sides of the fence, but rather as to where is the meaning in each side of this for a Christian, in terms of where can he see faith come to focus or to view in either side. It is sadly lacking if you were to buy either side. Nothing to do with it. And maybe that's where we are going to ask the question, where is the meaning? Where is the meaning of faith? Where is the meaning of sex in Christian life? Where can we find it? And that's our probing question, which I'm not here saying I got the answers. I think of the laws which we attempt, even in the church, to place. They're subtle, and they have a cozy effect. But when we come up against them, we realize that they are laws, and they tend to govern us and bind us. And so we are being controlled by laws rather than by a relationship between two people. I think of the story I've told too many times of Mary, who was going out on a first date, and she was going with someone not in her own congregation, so she wanted to be sure that she would impress him in the right way. So she thought, counsel I need, and of course the best place to go is to the pastor for this. So she went to see her pastor, and she said, Pastor, I'm going to go on my first date. Would you help me? And so he sat Mary down, and he said, yeah, Mary, if your boyfriend should attempt to hold your hand, that won't make your pastor worry. Or if he should attempt to hold both your hands, that won't make your pastor worry. But Mary, if he should attempt to kiss you, that will make your pastor worry. So with this counsel in mind, she went out on her first date. And a couple of weeks later, pastor saw Mary and said, well, how did it go, Mary? Well, pastor, he did hold my hand, and I thought to myself, that won't make my pastor worry. And then, you know, after a while, pastor, he held both my hands, and I thought again, that won't make my pastor worry. But pastor, then he was about to kiss me. Yes, Mary, what did you do? I kissed him and let his pastor worry. We know that rules are made to be broken, and we're going to spend a lot of energy when we see a rule set up, how we can get around it. And as, you know, and as Christian people, we'll do a lot of rationalizing on this point. So I think at the same time we see that when we bounce only against rules, we destroy many things. We destroy a relationship. And God has much to say about the relationship between two people and in the meaning of sex. Therefore, a man by the name of Dr. William Cole, who says that the meaning of sex for a Christian life is found in the call to responsible freedom. Now, if you youth have been looking at it at all, I am quite sure you'll say, now that is double talk. And church does this real well. They'll take a little of this and a little of that, and then we got nothing. And as a result, this is what it says. Easy way out, you know. I submit to you, I think it's the most difficult road there is to walk. I really do. Responsible freedom. And it seems to me that no place in Scripture, parents or youth, is the Christian life an easy road. It's a difficult one. For when we actually are in the gospel, we don't live according to a set of rules laid down for us, and we can check them off. We did this in the army. It's quite simple to know exactly what I was to do. But the minute I became out of the army, I had to make my own decisions, and that was rough, real tough. But I found a little scope of what freedom was all about, that I was free, not from any participation or any responsibility, but free to responsibly make my own decisions. And it seems to me the gospel has quite a little to say about this. For a person who walks in this kind of call, married or unmarried, it would seem to me, would then have to take a look at the things which do have to come in their disciplines, that have to do with society, that my social responsibilities are there. I must be recognize them. And at this point, he's not ready to say that I'm going to just look at the rules first, but the meaning behind these rules, and I'm going to have to bring them in terms of part of the discussion and part of the overall view is started deciding upon action or decision. At the same time, he will look on the other side and say, I also am free. I am free because God has freed me from all laws. Christ has fulfilled all laws in my life. I am free, but I am free to act and free to really find a fuller realization of myself and my partner. Now, it could say, if you want to go ahead and kind of move it down, there's a famous quote, you know, that's been often mentioned by Luther, that love God and do as you please. And that is frightening talk. Basically, I think because we start on the other end first, you know. We take a look at do as you please, and it just haunts us. Whether we're parents looking at our youth or youth looking at themselves or vice versa. But isn't that really, parents and youth, really where we must sit, must stand in the viewpoint of our relationship and finding meaning for sex in our relationships with our partner? If it isn't, I think we're reducing it too often to something far less than it is. Love God. Sure, that is where we kind of don't want to look at that too long. You know, we get a little long-faced. But boy, we like the other side. You know, do as you please or love as you please. I think we can put there for the sake of this context today. This kind of love, they tell me there's a couple of Greek words that kind of describe the two kinds of love. The one, a Christian love, love, an agape love. Other side, there's a romantic love, an eros love, that has to do with the individual relationship between two people, between God. Now, if we as parents, for instance, or you as a person who is frightened by this kind of an experience that's coming upon you, this learning to discover each other, you know, do we have enough faith, do we really, to say the pivot point to which we get guidance and direction is particularly on that first look at the agape love. If we start with rules, we are not placing our trust and our pivot point in that first part, because we, man, is making some safeguards. And so we move out of law rather than out of love, no matter how we try. Take a look at love God. If we can say that as youth and as parents, that in my sex experiences, whether I'm married or not, I find some real rich discoveries about understanding it and meaning as it has to do with faith when I review and reflect again the relationship I have with God. It has something to say, and I also can find it and discover it in my relationship with a partner. Christian love, I think, when we see it It unveils a total person for me. This Christian love that kind of undergirds this eros love that's happening to me or to you. Because you see, we realize all of a sudden that God called us not as only a soul or a body, but he keeps them together. He doesn't separate us. We are one personality, one person. And you tell me where your soul is. Can you dig it out someplace and cut it out and send it someplace? It is the person, the personality, the whole makeup of a person. And he says, keep it together. And when he loves, in this agape love, he loves the total person. He's not only interested in my soul, he's interested in my person, my body, that I take care of. It's a holy temple. He talks about it. Transfer it. See how it helps us to see that when I view my partner and I stand face to face with her or with him, all of a sudden I see not only the body of Jane, the figure, but I see Jane, the whole thing, the entire person. Now, lest again I warn you that it is the intention of God that we also see the figure of Jane. And don't apologize for it. But we see it in its beauty, really, when we see Jane, the whole person. And we don't buy part of it. We have to buy all. And as you get to discover each other, you don't only discover bodies, you discover personalities and all that goes with it. That's where it says something about it. If we want to get direction, love God. How about in terms of accepting my partner as a gift? I think this is great. You know, we've been taught to pray, thank you, Lord, for my parents, my brothers and sisters alike. That this is no accident that guy walked across your path, you know, and you all of a sudden got attracted to him, or vice versa. I'm talking to Christians. I think that's a moment of realizing again a great gift that you have been given. Now, you ever pray about it? And come home and in devotion thank God for this great big football player that asked me for a date tonight. Never do it. If you're a Christian and you live in the freedom of the gospel and love and the relationship of Jesus Christ, my goodness, shout to the heavens about it. It's great. God says, it's a gift I've given you. And when you pray to God and thank him for that gift takes on a little different image, you know, than if you can't equate it with a gift. It's not a handout from another guy or another gal. It's a gift from God. Try and emphasize sometime. Then Christian love, I think, accepts romantic love as a gift as well. And here we have real problems in the church. We have real problems as parents to really see this as a gift instead of a curse. And the dilemma and the tensions we're finding as we are involved with a gal or a boy, we see the cravings for each other physically, and we want to express it. And when we try to throw this all into a sense of meaning and of sex, our responsibilities that don't end here but continue on, we see that there have to be some controls. And at the moment, they can become a curse for you. Why did God give me that kind of a desire that I can't fully express? I think it's someone who said that, is it Freud again, who mentions that it can become a curse unless you see that there is some sense of reality to it all, that I will postpone, now a present good for a greater good in the future. Now that turns the corner a little bit. It doesn't remove the pain and the frustration, but it does help us get beyond the moment and ourselves to see that it can be postponed for something greater even. And why not take advantage of that, you see? it has something to say about that romantic love is as wonderful as it can be. Just think, if that wasn't involved in our lives, who in the world would get married and have a family with all the responsibilities and the headaches and the frustrations in life if this particular kind of gift wasn't given to us, to the urge and the desire to want to be together and to love physically and spiritually and the whole person. If that weren't there, who in the world would enter into a contract on paper to live with someone and raise a family? I think it's important. I think Christian love, when we understand our relationship with Jesus Christ and we live in it, parents, the quality is concentrated upon and not the quantity. I think it's 1 Corinthians, the love chapter, you know. Look at all the things, you see, that can emphasize quantity, but if there is no quality, nothing. So maybe the question, youth, if you ever get into the tingle again, or parents, when you are trying to decide what are the behavior patterns that have to be established in the relationship between a fellow and a gal, how far can you go? Is it one kiss, two kisses a night? Is it necking for, you know, 2 minutes or 4 minutes or 6.5 minutes and then break it off, you see? The question isn't there as to the quantity, how much physical action, but the quality of it. Not how much, but what is meant by it. What is meant by holding hands with a gal? I can't answer that for you. You must answer that. Or vice versa. For I'm convinced that there are some persons who can hold hands that it can be even quite promiscuous, depending upon exactly the attitudes of the relationship, the quality of it all. Whereas maybe the other person can be involved very emotionally in necking, where they have discovered each other in a true and honest relationship between the two, which might be far more wholesome than the person over here just holding hands, depending upon the quality of that relationship and the meaning of it. God says that we must, in the relationship He's given us, we've seen the quality of that love. It isn't just a demonstration. It is his entire person that is coming and scooping us and involving us. Likewise, if I catch the quality at that point, can I be sensitive to quality in my relationship to a fellow or a gal? My relationship as a Christian helps me move beyond myself or my situation. Romantic love, I think, you know, when we say love is blind, it's true. The romantic love, this eros, it tends to kind of put a wall around us. And the only thing that really counts is this gal of mine or this boyfriend of mine. That's all that really counts right now. That's important. And because it is such an exciting thing and such a demanding thing that sometimes we cannot look beyond that ring. But I think the agape love, the love that we live with Christ, it says something about you also got to widen that ring because you're still going to live, you see. You're going to live in that wonderful relationship, but it's going to have a bigger circle to it. And that counts. Remember Christ asking Peter, you know, do you love me, Peter? And, you know, he said, there's no doubt about it. He said, feed my sheep. And he asked him 3 times. And each time Peter became just a little bit more mature. But it seems to me that there is a lesson that we can learn in our own experience of faith, that it's possible to become, you see, so involved in the vertical relationship that we can't see how we really express the love by seeing people, the wide circle out here. From it, I can say, romantic love has a sense of two people, and they can become so involved in each other that we can't see beyond it at all. Our own involvement with Jesus Christ Himself helps us see beyond ourselves. And that is terribly important when you start asking and looking for answers in terms of your relationship and the meaning of sex. I think we also say that because in our experiences as Christians, we see honesty and integrity. We see truth shall set you free. That's it. And to me, isn't it interesting that many times the moments when I cannot express what I feel, either with my partner or with my parents or someone else, and as long as I can't express it, I am bound. I am bound by something that is hemming me in, and I can't have release, and therefore I can't understand the meaning. Oh, I could hope, if you're a Christian, that when you get involved in the back seat of a car, and there is the fellow who wants to put his arm around his girl, and she seemingly isn't, she's hesitant, that you'd have enough grace to talk about it. Oh, I know that's difficult. But if we don't, there's two people, minds working. One is wondering, well, now, what have I done wrong? Have I offended her? And the like. And the other person might say, well, now, what he's going to think of me? All the exchanges that go on. And you come home, have you ever mentioned it to your folks? The dilemma you're finding yourself in as to how to relate honestly, the urges, the desires that you have to love, and yet you don't know exactly how it's being received. Do you dare talk about it? The truth shall set you free. We talk about personal things in our relationship to God. That releases us to also be honest in everything else. For it is not dirty stuff. To have a tussle here is not dirty. If you're interested in Jane or Bill, and not just his body. What is faith all about? I'm sorry, the causes, I think of the last one, which I think I go back again to the problem I had with stewardship at this point, that maybe our whole pivot point can come again. That if a Christian love can see that he focuses on the gift, not the cost. How wonderful is your partner? How high do you see this person coming in on the stage for you? You see, if we can keep our eyes on the gift, I think the behavior patterns, the disciplines that come in will not be imposed upon you if we live in the gospel. But because the gift that God has given will determine many things, and there are costs, it says so. But you don't start with them. You see, sometimes we start with the costs and we start putting behavior patterns on people. Now this you can't do, this you can't do, this you can't do, this you can't do, or just so much. But we start with the person, and there will be pain. But how much do you thank God for that gift and get involved here, I think is important. When I don't think, or your parents can determine exactly where you stop in your discovering of each other. There are many levels of relationships. Remember always, it's a relationship. It isn't just two people walking alongside. It's a relationship that's being established on many levels. And because it has to do with the opposite sex, there becomes this desire to come closer together. And that is natural. And that is holy. And that is good. The important thing that makes it unholy is when we see that person as a thing and not a human that God has created with all his fullness. That's where the problem comes. So we better start talking about the gift. The gift, the gift, what is the gift? Each side of the pole. Risks, you parents can say, I could never do that. And don't get the idea that I don't have problems myself when I say with my 17-year-old boy, Dan, I can't give you the answers in your relationship with that gal. But I think we could talk a lot, Dan, you and I, about our relationship with God and how he has unfolded many things to us. That sensitivity, that sense of attitudes will determine my pattern, my behavior patterns as I relate to different people. And they aren't the same for every person. Then I'm reducing it to a thing. If I say, for every girl that you go out with, Dan, you only, you know, can hold her hand. I'm reducing that person to a thing because I'm putting them all in the same category. I'm not out with her. He is. And by God's grace, and I believe in this, that the Spirit of God is most active. Not in a negative way, trying to keep you from temptation only, but having discovered the sensitivity that God has created between two people and trying to interpret that language. That is great. And it is not reduced to the same mechanical process for everyone. Radical, to be sure. It is radical because we start not with laws, but we start with two people and their love that they find in Christ, which will determine, yes, and will end in some laws, some rules, but they are not imposed. For the two people want to find these answers so that they can live free for each other in a greater fulfillment.